Greetings, friends, and welcome to the Film Alchemist Podcast, the show where we take the movies we love, break them apart, to find out what gives them their New Jersey magic, as you'll find out this month. I am your co-host, Dan Dino, who will be joined shortly by our illustrious host, who's off doing 37 unspeakable things, Griffey. And our third kind of co-host this month, which is now becoming a thing, comic book artist Jay Rollins, coming back for J-April. But first, some business. Folks, we're on Patreon for only $1 a month. It's a buck. You'll forget about it and sign up, but it's a buck. You get to join the Discord. You get to hang out with us. And I really, really, really hope that those of you who have not signed up yet, sign up for Patreon, because this month is going to be some sweet exclusives on the Patreon, not just our lovely voices, but some other cool stuff might be coming their way. Also, we've got, of course, Tales from the Griff and some other mini series we're working on. Socials, we're all over them. Please come to us, love us, be friends with us. Of course, we aren't even supposed to be here today, or we are. I don't know, but either way, we love talking to you. We love talking to you. We love talking to our fans. All kinds of cool stuff happening over there. Email filmalchemistpod@gmail.com. Lastly, do you like short films? If so, please go check out Misfit Parade. That is Griffey's filmmaking collective. They're making some cool stuff. I got a sneak peek recently at one of the new ones that's about to come out, and whew, you guys are in for a treat. Let me just tell you, it's going to be sweet. All right, out of the way. Now, the month of J-April upon us. Guys, Jay requested, and we've been actually putting this off for quite some time, and it's kind of fitting that this worked out, but we are going to dive into the View Askewniverse, the collection of films that take place in the fictional New Jersey set in the mind of Kevin Smith. For those of you who have listened to the pod for a long time, I think, and for those of you who grew up in the late 90s, early 2000s, Kevin Smith is the patron saint of pretty much everybody involved in the filmmaking process from our generation, I think. I love Kevin Smith. He's the reason that I even found a voice and became confident enough to write things down. I think Griffey probably will allude to that as well later. He feels the same way. But Kevin Smith is one of the most important people in our collective filmmaking lives. And here we are about to talk to him. Jay, rightfully so, also a huge fan, is so excited. And he was like, we got to do this. So first up, of course, is Clerks, Kevin Smith's debut. Sundance, I believe 1993, and I could be wrong, but it's fine. I'm not looking at anything right now. I'm just talking to you. I'm so excited. Let's just get to the show. Let's do it.
Yeah, where they could just say things that are completely not aged well with
possibly go.
You could see the reel just.
Yeah, it was fun to go back to Clerks, man. I rewatch Kevin Smith movies a lot. They're kind of my safe, happy place.
Same.
I will say I almost never reach for Clerks though. Right, like mm-hmm. I understand. Clerks' place
the Clerks
in the legend.
Documentaries normally. Like,
okay, so I like watching things. I love watching like Evening with Kevin Smith's and this and that. Mm-hmm. I like the Clerks animated where they like animate the scene at the funeral we didn't see. So I would say I'm probably in that highest tier obsessive Kevin Smith fan. I can't keep up with all the podcast stuff. It's just I'm not able to have the time to do all the content he makes, right? But I feel like I'm pretty dyed in the wool, like, hardcore Kevin Smith fan. Same. And I'll say this just isn't the one that I reach for very often. And so I had not gone back and done Clerks in a long time. And it's kind of this fucking fascinating, like, artist statement that I love. And it's the movie that just never should have been. And the fact that it is and created this, like, very important thing in my life. I don't know. It was fun to go back. And again, take out some of the 90s shit. That's just how people talked in the 90s. I was a young person in the 90s. Sure. That was how we talked, you know? So take some of that stuff out. I still just find it charming, man. Like, this is one of those, like, true warts and all kind of scenarios. But I was going to ask you guys this, because I asked my wife. I was like, do you think a person who finds this now who's 16 will still experience it the way we did?
Well, it's that Gen X idea that nothing matters.
Yeah.
It's a day in the life. I mean, we can get into this later, but the entire script is building to the idea that he's going to get shot.
Yeah. By the way, one of the great decisions in history to not have that be the ending.
Truly a dog shit ending had that come to pass.
But again, that's the film school thing, dude. What's more dramatic than a murder or a suicide? Like, when I was in film school, that was the go-to.
That had actually been the go-to ending.
Yeah.
And
I'm an angsty young person.
That's not the first time that Harvey Weinstein forced a happy ending.
Oh, shit, dude. I didn't know we were doing that, coming out fucking guns blazing.
It wasn't Harvey Weinstein.
All right, you have a guy that makes that joke work?
His name was Bob Hawke. There's rhyming words in there.
Actually, if you watch the documentary, you might understand. Sorry.
I think we could all agree we should just fucking stuff Harvey Weinstein in a
locker. Yeah, I was
going
to say, I'll make the joke work, but I would like to stuff him in a box and never hear from him again. Like,
let him and his journey to hell continue separately.
I'm bummed out that when I come on the show, you don't do your normal intro where you find a funny little nickname for Dandino.
Okay.
Gotcha. Because this is the one where
you have any other complaints you want to get out of the way while we're
my hetero life mate and guy who sucked 37 dicks or my hetero life mate and
so you thought about this. All right.
There were so many in this one.
And
I probably would have called one of you the berserker. Yeah. Like, there was a lot. No, okay.
I would have gone. Griffey probably would have gone hetero life mate for this one.
But it's just the hetero life mate part is what's blows so easy.
I'm sure that we Kevin Smith is so baked into the way that I communicate with people I'm close with.
Same.
That's just been something that me and my friends have called each other for a long time, and it's just something specifically from these movies.
Yeah.
But that's what I wonder. I wonder if you're done with your, you know, Karen-ing and fucking calling out horrible men from the past. Do you think that young people can access this movie like we did?
Responsible for Quentin Tarantino and Kevin Smith. You know, there's sometimes money.
I get it. One time the devil went down to Georgia, dude. I get it. Yeah. I know the game. I know the game.
This is a great start. I'm already enjoying J-April. I'm not going to lie.
I thought we'd get at least halfway through the View Askew universe before we relitigated Miramax. This was just some children in New Jersey, right?
Well, okay, so watching this movie, you were talking about flaws and all. It kind of is best to, like, so I watched it, and then I watched it again, and I took notes, and I watched it again with audio commentary. I actually tried to do it one more time with the 2004 Clerks X commentary.
Mm-hmm.
That dude, it's 2004. He's done with Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back. He's not ready to do Clerks 2 yet. That dude doesn't give a shit. He's eating a sandwich. I'm listening to it in headphones, and that disgusting fat bastard is just chewing in my ears. And not talking about the movie. He's talking about how Scott Mosier saw his mom naked once. Nice. Just like, I'm not doing this.
So it didn't have the ASMR quality you were hoping for?
Oh, God. But I really hate ASMR. And I especially hate that people enjoy ASMR food eating. People are sick.
People will jerk off to anything, dude. You know this. You know this.
And you know this. But, anyway, so, like, to put it into its cultural context and the context of just these whatever 15, 20 people, 30 people who were putting this together, it's very important to enjoy this movie. Like, there aren't cutaways where, whoa. Testing. There aren't cutaways where there should be. For instance, like, you know, when Chewy Gum guy drops the lung down, you should have a cutaway to the lung. The only cutaways he did were when an entire long take didn't work. And he had to splice two takes together. And he says it in the commentary. He's in the middle of doing Mallrats, which is like literally like less than a year later. Like,
right.
And so he's talking about that he had to do a cutaway to the pie, or he had to do a cutaway to Jay and Silent Bob, or whatever. He's talking about it as if it's a mistake. Like, yeah, well, we just couldn't get this take. And it's, but it's, when you watch it in that context of a kid who's just trying to figure out how to do this, who had to put actual reels of film together by himself, it's a magical movie.
Yeah,
it is incredible. Like, the whole story leading up to this, and the budget, and the hurricane that let him file the insurance claim, the credit card, like, this really is just a, like, a person who wanted it so bad, who just wanted to have their voice be heard and put something into the world. And I think that's why so many of us, like, when I was in film school, there were, like, the Kevin Smith kids. They're like, this is the reason we're in film school, is because we want to do that version of our own stuff, right?
Yeah.
And I think on that level, there is a charmingness to it, right? Because sometimes, like, we're making short films now, and a lot of times we have to shoot so much, right? And there's, so, like, every fucking move, if a hand grabs something, that's got to be on camera. If you do that, you, like, you shoot all of this fucking coverage, right? And it is, there is something about just fucking putting a camera on a tripod and just fucking go, go. And in a way, it kind of actually, the production limitations, right? Actually, I think helped the movie out. Because if you look at the opening scene, right? A guy falling out of his closet. You're like, no, he didn't fall asleep in a closet. What are we doing? A guy making cereal in the top of a cookie jar. You're like, who is this fucking slob who then goes to work and is responsible adjacent, like, what is this? And that's when you're like, oh, he's making a movie, right? Where he's like adding like idiosyncrasies that don't make sense. Once it gets to the part where it's just people talking, even though, because Amy's like, I love it because this is how people talk, and I go, literally no one talks like a Kevin Smith movie. Yeah, that's not how human beings speak.
That's,
I think that,
but within,
that's like
the reality
first one
of
where,
the
like,
world,
but I think that by
it becomes that way.
I think that cultural, it's sort of like when you watch a movie, or when you, it's like people who watch movies by osmosis. Like, we talk about this on the show a lot. Like, that thing that you think you've seen just because everyone's told you about it, and you've seen like 4 minutes of it or something like that, but yet technically, because everyone else told you how the fuck it went, you've seen the movie. Like, it's so, like that, because I, like, this is the hardest thing, because, like, I think I saw this when I was not supposed to watch this. Whatever age I was the first time I watched this, it was not correct, because I remember it being like a fundamental, like, shift. This is like the ground shakes beneath you moment. And because I'm one of those, yeah, I think we all are here, that's why we're doing this, but, like, you know, I'm one of those Kevin Smith kids who went to film school. I was like, oh shit, I could do that. Like, oh wow, like, I am creative, I like writing, and therefore I feel like I should be able to, that feels right to me, that feels like something I want to do.
Right.
But I think that the thing about, like, the everybody, because I've had that conversation with so many people where people watch Kevin Smith movies like, oh, you talk like that. I'm like, no, I don't. Like, that's, nobody,
but
I agree,
on
no one
level,
in the world talks like that.
Like,
but
he
by
gave
osmosis,
us permission to go try to be that kid who, like,
right,
added,
well,
words that
but
don't
by
fit
osmosis,
into
overall, we all talk like that because that's just the movie you point to when you say, like, we quote it. Like, because you quote this movie, because there's things in this movie that have become part of your lexicon, therefore you talk like this movie. It's very, it's such a fascinating thing culturally.
Right.
When you watch the Clerks, because you're like, I don't, I'm like, there's no one in the movie. No one in the movie is like a real person. It's absurd. There are people there are people that we wish we were, like Randall. Everyone wishes they were Randall, especially if you've worked a 9-to-5 or worked a shitty job. Like,
Randall's the working
QB
class
Randall.
Larry David. We all
he's
wish
an
we were
absolute. But like, in reality, he's a total dickhead. And so is Dante. We all
everyone
wish
would
we
hate
were certain
Randall.
People. Yeah.
Everyone absolutely. Would mostly hate Randall if you hadn't like grown up with him, right? Like, yeah, I get it.
Yeah. And Randall is that guy. So like the context that I needed to put into this movie for a lot of his weird speeches is that they are 22 years old.
Yeah. You're 22. Yeah. Which I always forget I they're 22.
You're 22 years old. You know, like,
dude. Yeah. The first time Jay and Silent like Bob came out and you're 40. Like, you're like, oh my God, they're babies.
Yeah.
But yeah. I mean, that's because just at the time, right? Like the first Kevin Smith movie I got handed that like altered my life course and made me fall in love with Kevin Smith was Mallrats. I got handed Mallrats. Someone's like, hey, this is, you know, you and your friends and you'll probably like this thing. And they were right. And then I was like, well, now I got to go find fucking everything. I remember going to a store and scouring and I found like bong water, right? Like all the offshoot stuff that they had started to do is like trying to like produce other movies, right? And then I found Clerks and I was like, all right, I'll fucking watch whatever Clerks is. It's pre-internet. So I didn't have like a way to like really, or at least pre-internet for me. I'm sure people in not the Midwest had internet. I didn't really have a way to research it other than just going to stores and saying,
hey. Indiana did not.
Yeah, Indiana, not geographically far from Chicago, but believe you me. And yeah, just going to stores and being like, hey, have you ever heard of this guy, Kevin Smith, and do you have any shit with his name on it? And I remember watching it, and it's just, at that time, I had never seen a movie like that, right? And probably never saw another one until, like, Blair Witch, right? Like, I had never seen a movie that looked, for lack of a better term, like this piss poor, right? Where it's just like a kind of ugly, unproduced reality.
I think at that time, too, you don't understand. That's what makes it so fascinating is like, because we've all watched movies and at that point, we're all, you know, none of us know what we're looking for in independent film. And I think because it does look like now we're like, it looks so shitty.
But well, I was at that age, like, I didn't even really know what independent cinema was.
Well, That's what I'm getting at is you're just sitting there and you're like, what am I watching? Yeah. Like, you don't understand what shitty is. And then, like, you get older and you watch other movies and you're like, oh, wow, that's because they didn't have any money and all these other things. Like, it's such a fascinating, like, again, it's just like somebody is like, opening your skull and just like dumping all this knowledge into it that you're like, I didn't know any of this existed until just this moment. You're like,
and it's not
shit.
On purpose. It's not Napoleon Dynamite.
No, not at all. Yeah, it's not supposed to beat you over the head with it.
It's not on purpose, but I always looked at it like it was security cam footage. You know, I was, that's what it was for me because the fact that he just sets a camera on some sticks and lets you watch. You do believe that these people exist, or at least you believe that Dante and Randall exist.
Their reality becomes invited to you.
Well, this is
that's
like
where the dialogue is like, I really think they, you know, if he had failed at selling like three or four scripts before he made this one, mm-hmm. he would have known that Dante and Randall talk like that. And everybody else talks like normal people.
Yeah.
But that's the charm of it, is that everybody's got the best vocabulary, the filthiest mouth.
Everybody has the best vocabulary, the filthiest mouth, and the weirdest deliveries, because half of them are not actors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, it is, and he's not a director.
No,
you know,
not
he
at
just,
all.
So what he's trying to do is make sure everybody says every precious, perfect line that came out of his genius head.
There is like this
without fumbling,
especially independent film. Like maybe it's just, I mean, I don't know. But for me, when people fuck up, like it happens like at least four times in the movie that are, like people fuck up their lines. You're like, oh man, that is like charm right there. It's like, you don't have enough money to do another take. Cause those reels cost, dude. Like,
you know, what's funny though, is that I'm kind of with you. It becomes this great weapon of the movie because it is this like, to use a Frasier word, right? The hoi polloi, right?
Oh my God.
The hoi polloi of people that come in and like jerk off in convenience stores and look for eggs and milk, all of these fucking things, right? But watching these people who are at this kind of lowly station, the station that my family existed at the time and everyone I knew, right? aspiring to talk in these kind of Shakespearean soliloquies, there is a charmingness to it. You're like, of course they'll fucking bunch the words up. These are not words that people like us use. Right? And I thought that it becomes this weird like Veronica especially, I'm like, it plays exactly like a girl who's at college and is discovering words. And she wants you to know that she's discovering words. And it becomes very charming to me. Because, I mean, again, I think if you take a real step back, right? Like the 100-foot objective look at Clerks. Like, there's not a lot of it that works on like a filmmaking level. But they nailed the most important thing, which is this was a resume for a guy who had a lot more to say. And he had a lot more to say to a ton of fucking people that were not getting the movies they wanted. For me, it's that crackling energy of Clerks is the only thing that mattered, right? Well,
I think the most important... I tell people this, like, whenever people... Like, especially... all produced a couple of things now, and like is one of those things where I'm like, I don't give a shit what it looks like to a certain point, but if you can't hear what people are saying or intelligibly hear them, then the movie sucks because people don't know what they're looking at. And this goes to what we've been talking about, like, you don't know that it's 16 millimeter film, black and white, and that it's grainy on, like, because they don't have any money. You assume that's style, but if you can't hear what they're saying and understand what they're saying, even if they technically don't understand in a couple of cases what they're repeating or saying, the movie is a fucking failure. And I think is the key component for Clerks and really any Kevin Smith movie, but especially Clerks, because the visuals are so not arresting. And that goes for most Kevin Smith movies, by the way. And not to say that he's just not a visual filmmaker. And he's also said that a lot. But because he's
not, a lot better, but yeah,
the dialogue is so intrinsically valuable to making the movie an experience that that's the point. Like, to me, that is like the point of watching a Kevin Smith movie is like, I for one, like when I was a kid, I used bigger words sometimes, and I don't know what the fuck they meant, but I said them and people made fun of me a lot of the time. When I watched this movie, I learned a lot of the words I was using incorrectly were bad, but also it was one of those things where, again, it makes the world feel less huge when you see other people talking. And that's probably like the you talk like Kevin Smith thing is like, I at least now feel like there's someone else in the universe that makes me feel normal worldview feels okay.
Yeah. The you know, you have to be able to hear technically that sound was recorded and all that. And they do say that's like the one thing that an audience will not forgive is poor sound. What is the real lesson of Kevin Smith is, do you have a voice in the art you're creating? Right? Like, people will forgive a lot of filmmaking as long as the number one sin is like, do you have something you're trying to say in a way you want to say it? And that is something that Kevin Smith never lacked, right? Because to your point, Jay, it's a young kid who's like, everything I'm saying is genius and important.
Yeah.
Even if it's not, they're treating the material with the level of respect and love, right? And that carries through to an audience that needs it. So that you have to be able to hear the voice of an author, right? And that is the greatest strength of Clerks, and I don't even think it's close.
It's the strength of Clerks. Yes. It's not the greatest strength. It is the strength. Yeah. That's why you watch
that fucking 90s soundtrack. Like, there's some like energy moments in this where you're like, hell yeah. It's a little punk rock.
This is one
of those
moments this is one of those moments where I wish I had been able to, because I don't know what the initial audio, because this is obviously part of the release through Miramax. I don't know what the soundtrack was probably when they put it out at Sundance. Like, I would be fascinated.
This was the soundtrack. So I listened to the audio commentary, and what's really funny is that he thinks that the sound mixing on the, he thinks it's too loud because he did the sound mixing, and he doesn't like what these fat cats at Miramax did, but he did it. They used all the music that he chose. This is like such an insane bolt of lightning he should not have become who he was. How does this happen? Because, like, not only did he, like, have a bunch of songs that need to be licensed before you can put a movie out, but he also, like, every single shot has 100 different brand names in it.
Yeah. Well, like, yeah. What's
that's
smart
fair
about
use,
it,
though,
though,
as long as they're existing in a space in the way they naturally would, and you're not
well,
saying, like,
not only
Wonder
that,
Bread
you're,
gives
yeah,
you dick cancer.
You're also not disparaging anyone's
but they
product.
Say Gatorade, like, 7 times.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's just
but
Gatorade.
The Gatorade's not making them be delinquent yeah. workers. The Gatorade exists
for
Gatorade.
Chewy's gum is, you know,
yeah. Oh, you're right. Okay, so they did specifically that whole thing of people walking in and saying, pack of cigarettes, is because he talks shit about
Because yeah,
tobacco industry
is
in general
literally
yeah.
killing you, right?
Anybody notice that the Gatorade trouble. Bottle was glass?
Yeah,
it was a glass bottle of Gatorade.
That was an old way, dude.
I remember that. Yep. That was like a big. Like, that was a big when people would because when we played basketball, if you had Gatorade, it was like if your Gatorade bottle broke in your bag, you were fucked because all your shit was Gatorade.
That. I don't remember that.
I do. That was. I remember at least one time we had at least one time there was a dad who broke a bottle of Gatorade on everyone's clothes. It was like, cool, good work. Well done.
I have my notes broken up into vilification. Randall.
The fucking, just the, everything about this movie, dude. The audacity, you know, vilificate. Like, he's fucking like.
That's
like
a
kind of
but that's also
Bergman
just like
movie.
A vintage 90s independent film thing, like to bookmark the scenes of each moment in this movie with just like dictionary terms. Like, and some of them do not, like, Jay, did you look up what some of these words meant? There's one word I do not remember.
What, purgation?
No, not purgation. I think it's precipacity or something like that.
Perspicacity. That perspicacity is.
What does perspicacity mean?
It's, your ability to come up with, it's actually a very funny one that it's in there, that's almost yeah. at the end. It's your ability to come up with many, many vocabulary words. It's
there you go.
It's
there
a joke. It's that one's
yeah,
good.
That's the
it's
a cuntier yeah. way to say verbosity. Yeah. Verbose, yeah.
I only know that one because of The Simpsons. Lisa Simpson thinks that she's becoming stupid like the rest of her family, and she goes, oh no, it's a reverse capacity.
Perfect. Oh my god.
See, what do you guys make of the choice to go black and white?
I think
kind
it's
of
great.
A cool thing that like has made Clerks feel unique.
I think it's what got
it a choice.
Yeah. I think it was very it's what that and the little bumper tags are what got it bought. His little attempt to be a film maker. We were talking about these big words, but they are what makes it Clerks. But I think he missed out on making the bumper to each scene, Jay and Silent Bob. He would have if he knew what would happen, what he would eventually do with them. But it should be, you have a scene, you cut to Jay and Silent Bob, and the night gets darker, the day gets longer and darker and darker, and they're still out there. Jay and Silent Bob are perfect in this movie, by the way.
Yeah.
Jay's first line is titties, I think. Tits and ass, tits and ass.
He just comes in hot, dude. He just comes in the hottest.
The choice to make it black and white wasn't that to save money?
It's well, not it's a choice. It was the money. It was how they could spend.
A
there was
lighting
no choice
and color
to it.
Correction choice, yeah.
Yeah, it was a money yeah. choice. It's
yeah,
cheaper
it,
to shoot,
it, again,
cheaper to shoot
a,
on black and white.
It was another way. I was thinking in my mind, I was like, other than It's a Wonderful Life, this might have been like the first not old movie I ever saw in black and white.
Mm.
Like black and white to me as a kid always signified like, oh, that's a grandpa movie. Stay far away, right? That means there's going to be like boring ass cowboys in it. Like, I'm uninterested.
So, it took you a while to get to Schindler's List? Got it.
Yeah, I mean, I was like fucking 9 or 10.
I know as a 9 year old, you were really into. I know as a 9 year old, you were really into World War II, as that's your chosen war. But
how fucking dare you? How fucking you're just throwing it back on me that I wasn't like an aware enough 10-year-old.
We all know that we know that's the war you'll be choosing as you creep into old age.
I'm 10 years old. Schindler's List came out. It's time to put away childish things like Jurassic Park and Batman.
And watch
talk about some heavy
very,
shit.
Very terrifying.
Yeah, I actually was watching it last night, and I was like, I think there's really one scene in this movie. I think there's one scene in this movie that Kevin Smith owes his entire career to. The whole fucking thing, right? We kind of mentioned Bob Hawke earlier. We made like the kind of crack about the infamous screening in New York City where essentially like 8 of them showed up and then Bob Hawke. And they were like, oh, this is it. This is the only time we'll ever screen it. I'm in huge fucking credit card debt. This is like a whatever. We'll celebrate it tonight. And Bob Hawke became this champion that like, you know, told them to go to Sundance, all this stuff, right? He became like the savior of this thing. I think other than Bob Hawke, I think there's one scene that Kevin Smith owes his entire career to. And it is, and not to be, you know, negating the rest of the film, which I cherish a lot. But it's the Death Star contractor scene. It was the first time for me as a young person, and I grew up obsessed with Star Wars, right? My Nana gave me the VHSs that she recorded. And I fucking love Star Wars. Like, loved it in an unhealthy way. Right? The way I love Batman and Spider-Man and the X-Men and Ninja Turtles, right? I was one of those, like, fanboy kids back in an era where we didn't have a lot of access to that. Like, if you missed an X-Men cartoon, God's help you. Because next time you'd come in a week later and be like, what the fuck did I miss? I have no idea what's
happening. And you saw the highlights,
happening.
You're like, oh, great.
Yeah, who are these four extra mutants? Where the fuck are they? And you'd go on the school bus and be, like, ashamed. You're like, I can't represent this week, right? Or Marvel cards, right? Trading cards. That was a big... You had very few ways to access these things. And it was also one of those, like, you were, like, the nerdy kid, so also, like, not the coolest thing on the playground to be fucking riffing Star Wars, right? I remember as a kid seeing this, and I'd be like, oh, my God, they're fucking... It took me, like, almost a minute to realize they were talking about my Star Wars. And I was like, oh, my God, they're talking about Star Wars the way we fucking talk about Star Wars. I think that scene was the real invitation to this massive audience that now he's cultivated. This, there are more of you out there. I'm one of you. Don't you wish you had a really fun, interesting friend to talk about nerd stuff with? Come to me. And now at this phase of Kevin's career, that seems to be like the prevailing kind of job he has, right?
It feels like he's
I wonder this movie without
only ever
Star
watched
Wars
movies
scene,
made by George Lucas.
Yeah, what happens if he doesn't talk about Star Wars in this movie and he just talks about how depressed he is?
I think
you about
miss
his
a cultural milestone. I think you miss a cultural milestone. I do like the idea of Little Griff on the school bus trading Marvel cards, talking about building contractors in Return of the Jedi. That makes me happy.
Well, I used to, that was my move in high school back when I was like, why am I not getting laid? I always had Star Wars Trivial Pursuit in my backpack in case people wanted to spontaneously throw down a game.
Okay.
It was really cool. I had these like golden pieces that, you know, like I was like, this is pretty cool. Everyone's going to want to, you know, fucking lick my hog after they see that I'm like really good at Star Wars Trivial Pursuit.
My hog.
Never went down. That's a real Midwestern.
I think the Star Wars sequence is obviously a really important moment for all of us in terms of relating to the property because we were young enough when we all saw it.
And I saw Mallrats first, so I was like really in tune with this guy's one of us.
Sure. However, I don't think that's the scene that makes Kevin Smith exist at all.
I think
disagree.
That's how he found a non-Sundance audience.
I think... Okay, sorry, what's the guy's name? Not Ethan Hawke, what's his name?
Bob Hawke.
He may not have necessarily gotten most of the movie, but he had seen Slackers, and he saw Reservoir Dogs, and he's just like, this is what they're doing. I don't know if I get this movie 100%, but two guys talking about movies is what we're doing right now. And I'm the only one that sees at least that part. I agree that scene matters to making it part of that Gen X movie zeitgeist. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, Tarantino
I don't
likes
think
to talk
it
about
doesn't
movies
matter.
And music.
That's not what I was getting at. I think it's just a, I think it's an important scene for, yes, non, I guess, non-indie film.
Whatever, you're living in denial and yeah. suppressing rage, motherfucker.
This is the part of the pod where Dandito becomes the put-upon Dante, and Jay just unleashes his many tirades on us.
All right.
We've talked about this a lot, that Dandino does relate a lot to Dante in this, without the fact that Dante is just a huge piece of shit in this movie, which you always, I always kind of forget going back to it.
I do want to get to the fact like that Dante's a piece of shit, but
piece of shit.
I interrupted Alex, and I don't want him to not say his thing. What were you saying?
I don't remember, so let's move on.
Alex
All right,
goes
fine.
In
suppressing
salsa.
Rage. Suppressing yeah. rage.
Alex goes in the salsa. Jay's in the salsa.
Our salsa. Our shark. Our shark.
Our shark.
But yeah, I think there's a world where this is like an indie darling. Where it's like, oh, look at this like cool little movie from New Jersey. In much the same way, I don't think Slacker became like a big cultural thing. I saw Slacker because I had heard Kevin Smith talk about Slacker. I don't know that I would have crossed paths with that movie for many, many years without that, right?
I think that's a majority of us, to be honest.
Yeah, and I think Clerks would have been that movie where someone would have seen it, used it to tell their own story, and then if they connect with a big audience, they're like, well, you know, Clerks really inspired me, and then we'd go back and find it. I think that talking directly to the people that will become his core audience. I do wonder, man, there's a world where, like, if he just doesn't talk about it for fear, he makes that joke in the new Clerks, right? Like, I'm not getting sued by Disney, you know? If you take that off the table, I wonder. I wonder how this plays for a normal audience. Like, if I had seen it at 16, is there still enough in there that would have brought me in? And, you know, maybe. Maybe, I don't know. But I was thinking about it, I was like, I think that weirdly might be the most important scene Kevin Smith has ever written.
I think that is Kevin Smith.
Yeah.
You
that's
know,
a good way to put it.
You look at that scene, that's a Kevin Smith scene. The other ones could have been done by other people, or at least the dialogue.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, that's a Kevin Smith scene. And that's something that we have too much of now. And I don't think any kid watching this for the first time who's seen Ready Player One and Ready Player Two would be like, oh, cool, they're talking about Star Wars. People in a movie yeah. talking about Star Wars. But that was something.
Well, again, yeah, now that's everywhere. Everyone has a yeah. place where they explain their weird thoughts. And I saw this thing in a movie, and that's just normal now.
Yeah, it's called a podcast.
Yeah, right? TikTok, whatever. Like, back then, that wasn't a thing. Like, if I wanted to hear people talk about Star Wars, where was I going to go to do that?
Yeah.
Unless I happened to catch, like, you know, Harrison Ford on a late night or something. Like, so I don't know. I thought I
yeah, Harrison Ford on late night definitely was not the place he was talking about Star Wars. I agree.
A boy can dream, dude. It was different back then.
There was nowhere to talk about the stuff that we liked in that way. Because, again,
yeah,
this is also the idiosyncrasies of Kevin Smith is like that and the veracity of, you know, fucking 12 women versus sucking 37 dicks and all these other things that he's compacted into this movie that is essentially just like scenes of dialogue where people are talking about nothing that's consequential at all. Mm-hmm. I think the only thing that like of consequence happens besides the ending is maybe like Julie Dwyer's funeral, which we never see.
Yeah.
We only see the end result of.
You can watch it animated now, which is cool.
Which is also my favorite part of the animated thing is getting to see that scene, which yeah. I realize now when I watch it too, he definitely obviously rewrote the scene for the animated. I wonder what the original version of that was, because there's yeah. no way mm. that was the original version.
Oh, yeah. But no, finger cuffs was definitely there.
It was the...
He had the entire cinematic universe mapped out. You don't even know, dude.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Proto Feige over there.
I mean, there are things in this one that you see him expand upon in Mallrats. Like, I do think he's like, I'm going back to the hits, right?
Oh, no, he for sure was like, he was for sure a proto Feige doing like unified universe, at least through those first
Yeah.
For
his pitch movies. For Mallrats, what they wanted to do was they were like, let's remake this movie, but good.
Torch in a Mall.
And yeah. he said, how about we remake this day from somebody else's perspective? Which, I don't know, that even since he didn't really even have an idea for what Mallrats was going to be, but that's a ballsy pitch for a 22-year-old who's like should be consider himself very lucky. But it's that thing of like, oh no, I'm a genius, everything has worked out for me, that allowed him to push forward.
Hey man, if you ain't gonna bet on yourself.
Yeah, no, and he didn't get humbled until later, but he was always, I mean,
yeah, Mallrats humbled.
Yeah, Mallrats.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh shit.
They thought it was gonna be like this box office, but we'll talk about Mallrats more, but yeah, I mean, I think this movie is just it's this combination of it didn't look like anything we'd seen. No one talked like that in movies we'd seen before. And there is just this pure fucking audacity from the hoi polloi. I'm listening. to just have these like fucking strong, blazing opinions. And it is, it's one of them, you watch these actors fucking fumble the dialogue. They can't keep pace with it. You can tell they don't know what they're saying sometimes. Like they're just kind of trying to keep up with it.
I mean, I think it's just
it
the purity of wonderful filmmaking.
Charming thing. And I think by the time you get to like a bigger cinematic moment is like, you know, his girlfriend fucks a dead guy.
Yeah.
We're like, wow, that's fucking dark, but hilarious. Like
that guy was not shaped like him at all.
That was one thing I thought. I was like, damn,
is it hot when
Dante's
there's shit in the toilet
body.
And a guy is hard?
Yeah. Rick
on
Darris
the
was right. Dante is apparently
it's
out of shape.
You, it's funny. It's funny you say that because I thought this. I was watching it last night. I thought the same thing. I was like, how? I'm like, is this like weird commentary on
that guy's
being
bald?
No, total, his balls like, were sitting in the toilet water, dude.
She didn't try for
but
like
that
a
But that was like
grip?
My question. My thing was last night. I was like, is this supposed to be a commentary on Caitlyn? Because you know, it's very clear Caitlyn has like slept with everyone in the Triborough area. So like,
holy shit! This is the first time I realized this is the second time she fucked the wrong guy in the dark.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's
he
like
told
that.
The story
she
where the guy met
one.
The other
it was
guy
like
and
that.
Went
she
got
fucked
there.
Rick Darris. Like all these stories, and I'm like. Is the Arbinger. Idea is the movie's telling us that Caitlyn is a fucking, like, she just plows whoever she finds? Like, she is like a nympho? Which is, you know,
there's
her,
a bit
we've been talking about the bad
Caitlyn's
acting.
Character.
We've been talking about the bad acting. But Caitlyn Bree is a good actress. And the chemistry between Caitlyn and Randall is amazing.
I'll tell
and
you
he should
best,
have just rewritten, made a whole big scene
the
between the two of them just
of
charming
acting,
the shit out of each other.
The best sequence of acting is them contemplating what was going on in the bathroom. So she, when she comes back and he's just literally like, okay, come on, who went back there? Like the honesty in that moment and just like the very like quiet, like, hey, come on, like what's going on? That kind of thing. That is probably the best acting in the movie for me. Like you're just like
and
these people feel very real because they're about
that,
to deal with something.
Little
and her
dark.
And Dante talking when Dante is the scene ends with him saying, "If you hurt him, I'll fucking kill you."
Yeah.
The two of them together
that's my
when she's talking about
moment.
You that's wouldn't like it. I'm not a hermaphrodite. They do want to, the two of them do want a Dante Randall Caitlyn thruple. The two of them are playing like they don't, but they're just too charmed by the idea. Oh, you wouldn't like it. I don't, I'm not a hermaphrodite.
Yeah.
It's like, we can't have everything. Like the two of them just like bam, 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 back and forth in a way that the rest of the movie is trying to do a back and forth, but the two of them just do it so easily.
I'll tell you this scene too, and Griffey, I love you. This is a scene that like I could say verbatim, like this is something Griffey would have said in real life. Because there's enough like non sequitur moments of like quiet burns towards her. I'm like, I've been in conversations with Griffey where he does those that this to people. Like that whole thing's like, hey, you know, we have something in common. We both like Chinese. I'm like, that's something Griffey absolutely would have said in real life. In earnest to someone he didn't like.
And again, this is the thing that it's hard for me to separate Kevin Smith art from Kevin Smith is because I've told people this, and my wife knows this, obviously, she's married to me. I saw Mallrats, and I was like, Jason Lee's character in that, Brody, I was like, that's who I'm going to become. Like, that's what I'm basing my entire life choices off of. I was a young man and didn't realize that.
Of course,
that was not an aspirational person.
No, I wanted to be Brody. I think a lot of us wanted to be Brody.
And then you saw Randall and you're like, fuck, Randall's cool as shit. I was always into the, like, the Kevin Smith character who I shouldn't have been into. You're like, that's not the guy you want to end up as at 40.
That's the whole point of the movie.
But yeah, but see, I think that that part too belies like a really important other thing that Kevin Smith showed us, which I think by the time we get further in, especially the Clerks trilogy, when Randall, who's just this shit-talking cynic, as Jay was saying, right, like everything's beneath him, everything's stupid. When he says that, like, if you hurt him again, I'll kill you, right? Territoriality. Yeah. He was mine before he was yours. That's the only, like, kind of decent sentiment we ever see from Randall, right? And it's, even though Dante, all he does is bitch, and all that Randall does is bitch, and Dante has this whole other layer of being this, like, kind of Lothario scumbag. There is
these two guys who found
each other, and they do care about each other, that that really helps the movie out, man. And by the time you get to Clerks 3, that whole movie is just it's the answer to that moment, right? And I think that moment's really
no spoilers. I haven't seen that one.
Yeah, we can add it to the list. That could be our final instead of Clerks 2. But that's a really interesting one. I'd be interested to hear what you have to say about that.
Randall is the best part of the movie. Well, okay, so I don't think that Brian O'Halloran is very good at delivering this dialogue. I'm sorry, I don't.
He has a lot of heavy lifting.
He's perfect for the character when put up next to Randall. And Randall is so good. He really is a Lothario. Okay, so he definitely fucked that lady who was waiting outside of the video store, because first he was just like, oh no, I hate not getting videos, whatever. He's just like doing a little back and forth. He's like, I better get it to it before you do. And then he goes inside. He gets the keys. He comes in. He opens up the door, and then
he does that very Willy Wonka door open.
He leans out like the acid wash Lothario fucking cocksman that he is. And then we cut to
Ranger Danger over here. Yeah,
we cut to Syntax. He comes back, and he's talking about a completely different customer.
Oh, sin!
Time has passed.
Sin, a taxing of the soul. I get it. I see.
No, but
here comes Randall.
At least he at least got a number. Oh,
interesting.
And speaking of who's fucking who, Dante has not had sex with 12 women. I did the math. Let's break this down. He's 22 years old. Seriously. He's 22 years old. He has been dating Veronica for 7 months. It's also March. Okay. So let's go with that. Yep. He was 21 years old when he met her. He had dated Caitlin for 5 years. He has not seen Caitlin in 3 years. He was 19 years old when he broke up with her. Did he fuck 10 women in a year and a half? Or was he cheating on her as much as she was cheating on him?
I think the movie clearly states that Dante's down to cheat.
I think this is besides that, though, I think this is an interesting point that Jay's bringing up, because
Kevin Smith says
it in the documentary. He was like, I really wanted to be, you always want to be Randall, but I was the Dante. Like, we all know, like, you know, when you write those kinds of characters, like, you
Who's
write
his
these
giant
people
friend,
you want
to Brian?
Yeah, Brian Johnson.
Yeah, Brian Johnson is Randall.
Yeah.
Right? As we learn later, but yeah. You want
to
be
Bri. Yeah, like,
guy.
He always wanted to be Bri. So it's this thing, though, but, like, I don't think it's outside. Like, okay, so they break up when he's 19. I don't think it's outside the realm of possibility for Dante to go on this, like, cocksman bender where he's just going out and plowing
there,
whoever the fuck he finds.
I thought about that, too, and I went on a bender like that, but I had OkCupid and I lived in a big city. Like, he only really fucks people he knows. He doesn't go outside of anybody he's known from high school. And, like, that pool gets smaller and smaller.
I'm not from New Jersey.
Especially
or the Highlands
Julie
area.
Julie Wire died in there, yeah.
However, Well, we know he at least fucked Julie Dwyer. So there's at least one extra person.
So there's three. We know of three.
I'm not from the Highlands area in Jersey, but I know from where I grew up in Cleveland, those people, most of them stayed there and they all fucked each other. So quite frankly, it's not completely outside the realm of possibility.
It's like the Drew Carey show, I remember, yeah.
And then Veronica was the last one after a year and a half.
Yeah.
And he was like, she's nice. She makes lasagna. Let's do this.
It better be including an ending with me. Yeah, for sure. That was Veronica.
Oh, Veronica, by the way. When
I like Veronica in this movie a lot. I think her performance is charming.
It's very good.
He's painting her nails and she says, just look at the way she says, can anybody see us down here? And he says, why, you want to have sex or something? The way she says, can we? When he pauses and then says, seriously? She goes, no. She wanted to fuck him. She wanted to fuck him behind the counter, or at least give him a blowjob. She loves that shit.
Well, I think...
And then he
Randall's probably that kind of partner where, given that extra 5 seconds to think about it, you're like, I don't want to blow this guy. He's just that partner. He's constantly like reminding you not to fuck him.
He ruined by fucking loser, mouth. This fucking loser. He ruins that moment, that cute moment. I'm going to do your nails. Can anybody see us down here? You want to have sex?
Yeah.
Can we? That could have been some fun, but he decides that he wants to like go into this description of why it's easy to fuck a man, but not easy to fuck a woman. And that's another reason I think he has not had sex with 12 women, because he talks like a fucking 14-year-old talking about fucking.
I think the number is probably more likely 6, because you always double.
Yeah, there's men, you got to divide.
There's a common American pie math, yeah.
What is that old saying that they men divide their number they tell you in half, women multiply theirs by 3? That sounds like just one of those weird old sexist things of the 90s that I heard.
So
what is it, 110 dicks? What is that?
Yeah.
We got to do the math on that.
Let's see, that's 111 dicks.
That means she's only banged 9 guys, but sucked 111 dicks.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know that I would fucking care about the dicks.
This is a super pro feminist episode. I'm excited for everyone to hear it.
I just said, suck all the dicks you want. I'm fine with that.
He is telling a woman who just said she wanted to fuck him, making a woman come. Therein lies the challenge.
Well, I think a lot of us...
Fucking loser.
A lot of us who were just...
Why are you bragging about how much you know
90s.
About sex to a woman who you have sex with?
Right, but like, I was a teenager of the 90s, right? I was like one of the kids who was a teenager when like Woodstock 99 was happening, right? So a kid of the 90s. I think if you forecast back, if I had gotten to make a movie, right, like Kevin Smith did at that age... I'm sure I would look at it now, and every word that was coming out of characters' mouths, I'd be like, oh, dear God.
No,
like,
that's
I'm sure
why I hate
he watches
so much.
This
I remember.
Now.
I remember.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, now you are older, and you've learned lessons, and you've actually met gay people. You've actually talked to women, right? And you know, you've learned these lessons that young men don't
You've spent necessarily time outside of Leonardo Township.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's the thing, right? Like, there's a ton of those, you know, homophobic remarks that were just very prevalent, right? Jay's always saying all that shit. There's a lot of that kind of like not great masculine energy at times.
Well,
from a guy
who
I think Kevin Smith, you wouldn't say is like
movie.
A toxically masculine guy. But that was just the 90s.
But Jay wants to fuck Bob. Randall wants to fuck Dante.
Yes.
Jay is on a lot of speed at the beginning of the movie. That's when he like rips that blunt and then like runs really fast. I'll fuck anything that moves,
dude. Hey, that was
like the drunk thing to shout,
dude. We used to say there are just lines from this movie I've just said in conversation 1,000 times, and most people are what
constantly,
just all the time, all the fucking time. But that was like
I used to. This is a really like this is a really terrible thing. I used to shout like when we were in high school, the parking lot to get to like wherever all the students' cars were parked was right next to the cafeteria. So when everyone would leave, I would shout really loud, try not to suck any dick on the way through the parking lot to just whoever, just to see if anyone would turn around and say anything. I'm like,
it was
like,
a more wild
so cool.
time. We were
so punk rock.
I'll never forget because I started working at the movie theater. I was a small town, like, Indiana kid. I don't know that I definitely never met an openly gay person. And yeah. So we, everything, right? Like, those words were, like, omnipresent in conversation. They became replacements for stupid and dumb, right? And I remember, like, I had a friend who I worked with at the movie theater who was a lesbian who pulled me aside and just fucking ripped me a new one. She's like, do you know what it's like when you say those words? I was like, what words? She's like, you're saying all this shit about me and I'm gay. And I was like, what? I didn't say anything about you. And it, like, never dawned in my head that that would, like, hurt someone's feelings, right? And so these are the benefits of age and learning, right? That, you know, Kevin Smith is a fucking 22-year-old. In 1991 in Jersey.
This is what it was. I had gay friends in high school, but I didn't grow up on a compound.
Fucking dare you. It wasn't a compound.
I also had gay friends in high school.
Beautiful rolling
farmland.
But
still,
our school I graduated from was kindergarten through seniors in high school in one building, if that tells you anything. A drive your tractor to school kind of a community.
I did still throw out the old F slur way too much.
Yeah.
Often.
Horrible.
Not good.
When I say Randall is gay, I know that everybody says that and whatever. That's sort of he does love Dante and whatever. I think he's too quick to say that their high school friend who went off to Idaho and had a like nice relationship on a farm with another man. I think he's too quick to say that it's gross. and then he's just, oh, that sounds terrible.
This is the lady doth protest too much moment. You're really agitated by that.
He calls that deviant behavior, and then he's looking at trans porn later.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was...
And he wants everybody to see. And he said he wanted to watch it with Dante, you know, this is, and he actually looks a little bit hurt. He's like, oh, we were going to watch it together.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think even by the time you get to Chasing Amy, he makes that and then culture moves past it. And everyone's like, well, that's not appropriate, right? Trying to turn a gay one.
Chasing Amy is sort of the atonement.
Culture moves
past
where we are. But
it's I
just think Kevin Smith is bisexual and he still will never admit it to himself. He's married now. What's he gonna do about it? But
everyone is bisexual.
Everyone's
at some
a little
point.
Bisexual.
I don't know. I don't want to step in it where people in the community are like, "Hey, don't say that; it's offensive." But I'm just like, if you put like all the dudes who are on like Real World or Road Rules Challenge, right? If you took out the chicks and you just had two chicks, look at me, I'm slipping back into my 90s isms. Take out the gay.
Yeah, and you're talking about road rules. You're slipping way back in your.
I know. I'm really slipping back in.
Are you about to bring up Real World Seattle, where Steven slapped?
I'm saying,
if
you take the Real World Road Rules Challenge, where they're on like a top tropical island or whatever, you take out all of the hot ladies, and it's just the like buff, pumped up hot dudes. I mean, what are we talking? A week? 2 weeks? Without any contact from the outside world where they're just, like, standing 69ing each other?
What season of Real World Road Rules were you watching?
It's a thought experiment, goddammit. I'm not saying that was on the show.
What if they sort of, like, you know, just, like, got each other greasy a little bit, and then they did their own road rules.
I don't think you'd make it 2 weeks if you're just like, dude, no one's coming to get us. Like, this is our life now. You'd be like, oh, well, then I'm going to fucking bust. Like, I'm not living a life of no busting.
Let's do our thing. Let's just live our lives.
Yeah. Like the Ghostbusters, busting makes me feel good. Like,
This is a horrible, cancelable thing right here. But
maybe
this is what happens when you start reopening the 90s. We pushed it down.
Speaking of cancelable, I was gonna say, like, I was thinking about, like, how are we going to deal with this? Are we just going to start talking like them?
We all slip back into it, yeah.
There's like, maybe I'm just immune to it, but I felt like a lot of this wasn't that bad. And it's because I put it in the context that he's 22. I was 22 in 2011, 2010. And I still kind of thought and talked like this. And there are 22-year-old kids now who do talk like this.
They also wear JNCOs now, too, so we're all going back.
Coming back, dude. The 90s is coming back. We're for all better coming or back. Worse. Yeah.
I the one thing that I thought was strange was that this also works. I kept trying to like justify and rabbi. They kept saying Asian design major, but that's what it says in the newspaper because Caitlin's mom made sure to tell the newspaper that he was Asian.
That was such a weird thing when I was a kid. That really tripped me up every time he said it.
So it took me a few. When I was younger, I didn't understand. When do they say what his name is?
Sang, and he goes in the past tense.
Yeah. So like when I was younger, I didn't really think about it until I was like, oh, it's not Asian design. It's Asian design major.
Asian comma.
Yeah.
Design major.
Absolutely. When I was younger, went over my head.
Like Asian looking stuff. Like, is he designing
pagodas or something, or what's going on? I don't understand why that
exact same fucking thing. Okay.
Yeah, no. Like, I thought that too.
Put it together that I'm like, oh, he's supposed to also be Asian. I'm like, weirdly racist, but all right.
Even this viewing, I was like, oh, does he do Asian design? And it's like, no, because it confused it for an Asian drum major. And then he said, you eat Chinese. I got it.
Yeah, it's one of those things that you just like, now that I've made the mistake young, it's just always the first thing my brain goes at.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know.
That's not super cool to just keep calling him Asian for no particular reason. But I justify it to myself because that is the headline.
That's what they call it.
Caitlin Bree to marry Asian design major, and it's actually, I don't know if he did this on purpose, but it's very funny because Caitlin's mom called the newspaper, the tabloid newspaper, which is the newspaper she reads, and said my daughter is marrying an Asian design major. I don't remember.
There's something really hilariously white people-ish about that. It's just like, I don't know, he's Asian, so
old white lady, yeah.
Yeah, old white perfect lady. Old white lady.
She was
racism.
Proud that her daughter was marrying a non-white. Like, that's a nice change of pace.
The one thing
they were probably asking, what's his name? I don't know. He's Asian. Okay. What
but
does
the
he
reason
do?
That Caitlin doesn't want to be with him and takes a train from Ohio the day she finds out that it's going to go. This is. It was almost a romantic comedy until she fucked the dead guy.
Yeah.
But. The fact that she doesn't want to be with Sang because he's whatever, a company man, and now she's
going
to have to become a housewife.
Because he's going to be a successful dude.
Because he's very traditional.
He wants her to be a stay-at-home, like, kept wife, and she's like, I'm not going to do that.
Yeah, even though he'll be super successful.
Well, right, but, like,
but at what
he's
cost,
very
Alex?
Traditional, is and, like, that phrase, he's very traditional. He would make me into it. Like, I think Kevin Smith is like thinking about Japanese people from the 50s when he's talking about this Chinese guy. Like, I don't think he.
I don't think he's thinking it.
I'm not sure he's thinking, to be honest with you.
They didn't need to make a guy who's not on screen Asian.
For how overwritten
the
script is.
But he had that joke. You and
I don't think it's super well thought out.
So we've all written things, right? And you love your little joke. You got your joke or you've got your line that you just don't want to get rid of. You and I both that have something in common. We both eat Chinese. Is that line for him? And like, I'm sure he second guessed. Oh, why has he got to be Asian? Because that line's got to be in there. We're gonna keep pushing through. We're gonna keep pushing.
I don't think
through.
He gave a fuck, dude. The amount of like kind of slurs. And
I don't know. I
kind of
agree with
movie.
Jay. Is like, there's a really like that's just like a great Randall burn. You're like, oh, I got to keep that in though. Like. I kind of agree with Jay. Like, you're just like, it's like a not kill your darlings moment, which is fine.
Well, I think it's
but...
the same thing as like a he's fucked 12 women, but the timeline doesn't add up. I don't think there's a lot of additional thought.
I'm not saying there's a ton of thought that goes into it. I'm saying I kind of agree with Jay's point, though, in that, you know,
he just
you don't want to kill your darling. Yeah.
No, I
don't think. Yeah.
All that aside, bringing it back to wrap this up, the things about. Besides just like what it meant to someone like me and probably you guys to find someone like making movies for us, movies that felt so small they could almost have been made just for us, right?
Mm-hmm.
And like you think of those moments, right?
Like, it was speaking to you.
Yeah, and you feel like when Randall opens the door and there's the sign that says I eat cocks. And they're like, ah, ha, 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 like the worst fake laughing ever. And you're like, why are we just holding on this for like 40 seconds, right? Randall wouldn't just stand there. He would run out and like say something, or like, he's Randall. He's going to say, like, why? And you're like, what a weird moment. But to my young mind, that was just like, a, ah, like I was like laughing with them, right? And then, or like just all of these scenes. Right?
You know what I was laughing at?
It's funny, the guy in the Pringle can, like, there's just all these weird little moments that kind of became this inviting place to us, right? And then at the end, when you have the this kind of thesis of people who are unable to change their station in life, won't fucking take the risk to try to do something better, right? It's like, I think it's one of those, it invites you in with these kind of, like, very low-hanging fruit type of things. But it has this kind of charming, like, higher level that you can access.
I think that there's,
want.
Yes, I think that there's something for everyone across the entire movie in terms of what you're trying to say about the human condition. Like, again, what I was going to say was, I laughed hysterically because it's just great, stupid humor when, like, they get back from the funeral and Randall's like shouting at Jay, like, shut the fuck up, junkie. And he runs over and farts on him. I'm like, that's funny, because
Jay is
that's
just, dude, like when he's like, I'll kick your fucking ass. And Jay's like, yeah.
Like,
oh, that's my favorite. I was just
him
thinking
trying
about
to get from outside is like always favorite, my favorite.
That's my absolute favorite line read.
Because
you're not
know
allowed
for
to
a
rent
fact,
videos here anymore. Yeah.
You know for a fact that you know for a fact that absolutely 100% was just Jay was outside the store and said it.
Yeah, it's like, stand there and react. And he did. It was fucking
like
great.
In the moment, also, it was probably like, dude, what the fuck, man? You just blew a whole take. And then they saw it in the edit and they're like, it's pretty good.
Yeah.
That take, though, if you look again, the I don't appreciate your ruse moment.
That's one of the words I stole.
Jay is like, sort of taps Silent Bob and points to the lady. And then, for the listening audience, does a little little dick sucking mime.
Yeah. A demonstration of fellation. Yeah.
A demonstration of fellation.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's just the kind of like in between moments, I think, is where Clark soars. We heard the voice. You know, and I think Kevin Smith finding those moments, right, of like, you know, hey, most women just cheat on you. He gets his line in. You see him starting to become that guy. And I think very much like Randall, right, who that kind of like, you know, title doesn't dictate your actions, right?
Yeah.
Kevin Smith and where he was in life should not have been able to do this and become who he is.
Yeah.
But he did. But he fucking did and created a cinematic universe we're going to be talking about for the rest of the month. And again, like, I don't say this flippantly, like, finding Kevin Smith movies changed the path I was on in my real life. Real life decisions that have led me now to be a middle-aged man where I am.
Kevin Smith
were made
movies
because of the films that this person made, and I don't know that anyone else has so directly impacted me with their kind of art as Kevin Smith.
Kevin Smith movies are DNA for definitely me. And I know you too, Griffey.
Yeah.
Like, it's one of those things where it's just, it's indelibly part of who you are, because it was just such a mind-blowing experience to see something like that. No matter how you came to it, when you saw it the first time, it was just like, not even Clerks, just his movies in general, they were just different. And in a way, felt like, it was just one of those moments where you felt seen in a way that you hadn't been seen before.
You were able to feel ownership over his stuff. It was in a way I couldn't with Jurassic Park. You know what I mean?
Right.
It was absolutely my high school experience. And I had this little pet theory, a very like within the world of a Kevin Smith movie thing that I would talk about, was that everybody has the first movie that they came into that made them want to watch all the Kevin Smith movies. For you, it was Mallrats. For me, weirdly, it was Dogma.
Yeah.
And then I'm watching TV one day, and I see Jay and Silent Bob from the movie Dogma in a cartoon. And I was like, what the fuck is going on? What is this? And then I found out all about my friend Anna in high school. She came out as gay. I was like, let me show you a movie. She fucking loved Chasing Amy. And yeah. we will talk about that. But it's like,
yeah,
for all its flaws, it meant something to a high school girl who didn't know what it was to be gay.
Yeah.
That there's a movie about gay people.
And again, we kind of spent a long time talking about it. I think it's crazy to put, like, to go back and relitigate the flaws of movies that are just made at a time, right? Like,
yeah.
It's a movie of its time.
It's a movie of its time.
But again, I think it's just that I don't know what the world would have been like, man. Like, really, truly, if this kid didn't just fucking force this thing into existence, didn't, like, make his friend Walt Flanagan play 5, 6, 7 characters in the movie. Like, just didn't see it through. If Bob Hawke didn't find this, and it didn't get to Sundance, and it didn't have that Star Wars scene, and, like, that changes everything.
I think the light in this world would have been a little dimmer, if I'm being honest.
Yeah.
At least for us, like, do I just work at State Farm now? Like, who knows? I don't fucking know.
There are many, most universes don't have Kevin Smith being famous.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably a good way to say it. Like, the fact that we got Kevin Smith and still have him is an against the odds story. It's the story that everyone I know, I'm still writing feature films, right? Me and my friends are still, like, we just started a new production company and we're making stuff on trying to be on our way to making feature films, right? And we're still on that path, right? And he's the guiding light to me still. And if I ever sell anything or whatever, it'll have his touch on it. Right. And it's just there aren't that many art. Like, I'm not a musician, so I can't say, like, the first time I heard this band. You know, there are maybe some comics and books that have hit me like that. But this is just the guy who has the fingerprints on what I'll create someday.
Holden McNeil drawing comic books.
Yeah.
Holden McNeil drawing comic books and looking cool as fuck doing it with a cigarette hanging out of his mouth is what made me want to be comic book artist.
That's what I'm saying, right? So this guy made these things, and you're like, I wanted to just be Brody from Mallrats, right? Like, you just have these fucking things that, and again, I think that's his great power, was finding all of us who were not seeing ourselves in movies, right? Like, you know, movies of that time, like if I was watching Can't Hardly Wait or American Pie, you're like, I don't know which of those guys I am. I watch a Kevin Smith movie and you're like, I feel like all of those guys on some level, right? Like, those are all parts of who I am. And that just
I don't
was
know
what
if
I needed.
I'm not sure if I necessarily would. Yeah, I mean, it's
he
it's
was like the describe. John Hughes of our lives, right?
Yeah, it's just hard to describe. Like, I don't know if there's a way other than just saying he's had this indelible mark on my life in general, like from. You know, I know there was a time that I was this person, and there was a time I was a person after having watched a Kevin Smith movie, and I under like,
and I don't even remember that other guy.
That other guy was just, you know,
well, it wasn't even a guy; it was a child, right?
It was, it was a kid who didn't overanalyze all of the things in his life because they were, you know, because you're right. You know, when you watch that Star Wars scene, and that's something you talk about with everything. Like, that's just part of like general pop culture now, is just overanalyzing or relitigating things we had seen because of that moment. There's so many great, like, sardonic pieces of art that have come out from people who had seen Clerks and be like, oh, well, if that can do that, I can also talk about the veracity of, like, you know, time travel in a hot tub machine. Not saying it's the same thing, but like the same basic concepts of, like, let's discuss and relitigate a thing that we all just sort of accepted as, you know, form it was.
I think it's not fair now to compare him to Tarantino or Linklater or whatever, but it is fascinating and amazing that he was part of that conversation when he first made this movie. That
I think he just it's.
I mean, Mallrats and Before Sunrise are very different follow-ups.
Yeah, well, again, also, so like, when you saw those, though, right? Like, it was Robert Rodriguez and Tarantino and Kevin Smith were, like, the darlings of that moment. Robert Rodriguez shit was way too cool and inaccessible for me to like, oh, I could do that. Quentin Tarantino shit was way too cool and inaccessible, even though I think he's a better parallel as a young filmmaker to Kevin Smith, right? These film nerds that done good and wrote these overly written movies. But he was too fucking cool and slick, and they had suits and, you know, were criminals and shit.
Yeah.
Like, I couldn't access that.
You know what? It's the funeral scene and all of Reservoir Dogs is the same thing. You just talk about what happened after it happened.
I understood sitting in a convenience store working a fucking lame job because that's what I did in high school. As well as I understood walking around a mall and trying to find something to do because I had nothing else to do that day.
And that's what we'll do next week. We're running the risk of this being longer than the movie Clerks. yeah, man, just a movie that I just can't separate the art from like what it was at the time and where I found it. And yeah, it's like one of those artifact movies. I love it. I love Kevin Smith still to this day. I'm glad we're going to be working our way through the View Askew universe. So stay with us, guys. Lots of awesome movies to come. Jay has laid siege to a calendar month of J-April. It's his. He's with us for the whole journey. It's going to be amazing. So I hope you guys stick with us. I hope you go to patreon.com/filmalchemistpod. I hope you subscribe to the YouTube Film Alchemist. You can email us at filmalchemistpod@gmail.com and go check out some movies we're making on misfitparade.net. And until then, man, we'll see you next time. Thanks for joining, Jay. Tell them where they can find your stuff.
JRollinsArt.com, at Jay Rollins on all the internet thingies.
That's right. That's right. All right, guys, we'll see you next time for Mall Rats.
Bye.
What a Wookiee. Bam, bam. Would you like some making fun of yourself?